Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined again by Edwin Almeida, our property insider. Hi, Edwin.
G'day, Martin, and how have you been?
Yeah, pretty good. A lot going on. The story never stops, does it?
No, it never stops. And as you can see, the doomsday clock behind me, it's just telling us it's pretty much over, I think, after the articles that we've been reading on the weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff coming through, and we're going to learn a little bit of Chinese tonight, I think, as well, aren't we?
Well, I thought it'd be a novel idea to publish the post in its presentation, the way it's been presented on NetEase, and tell the viewers and the listeners what it's all about, and you're becoming famous all over the world, Martin.
Got branches everywhere. DFA is that. I sometimes call it the DFA effect, right? We're sort of getting a bit of a reach. But it is quite an interesting conversation because it really is part of a suite of conversations that they've had in their media about Australian property. And it's quite interesting that the Chinese media would pick Australian property as something to really focus in on.
It is, albeit that there are other articles that have also discussed other investments in Australia. But over the weekend, there were, we noted, three, possibly even four articles that, it was about three that came across the platform. And NetEase is not a platform that that could be taken lightly. It is a platform, and an online platform that's actually listed on the NASDAQ. So it's something that a lot of people pay attention to, whatever is published on that platform. People do take, things that are written on there, and with regards to finance, property, and anything else of that matter, it is of importance. People take note of how important it is as to the reason why it's published on that particular platform.
They also run pig farms. Did you know that? It says the company also owns several pig farms on its description. We'll put it up on the screen. I thought it was quite amusing.
Well, look, I didn't go into that much into depth. I just thought it was rather interesting, and it's a company that's definitely not to be taken lightly. So they obviously got other types of investments all over the world, but it is what it is, Martin. It is what it is, and doomsday is upon us. And the articles that have been published on this platform. Certainly is a warning sign. I take it as a warning sign as to what's to come, potentially what's to come in the property arena, because they target Melbourne and specifically the Sydney property arena.
Yeah, well, let's go to the first one. In fact, I think Digital Finance Analytics actually gets a direct mention.
Yes, Martin, Gangster Economics does get a mention on the first article. The heading is rather an interesting one. You know, Australian property market may slump 80%, experts say, in a worst case scenario. So that's part of the heading. And this is the article that does quote your scenarios, albeit it also makes reference to our other media as well in the article. It's not just referencing yourself and what you put out in on various various times, various podcasts, and with various media across Australia as well. They do mention the British Daily Mail with regards to some of the commentary on there. I don't know what in one of the paragraphs they also mentioned specifically about Melbourne. House prices falling from the average 780,000 to potentially 250,000. They do mention it's in US dollars, which I found interesting, and also overall the takeout is that it's a significant fall. They don't cite the actual source for that, But then in the following paragraphs, they speak specifically about your scenarios and what's to come, and they also tie it up with with the area of the pandemic doesn't come into full control here in Australia, and what the economic outcome of that is going to be, particularly around property and in reference to you, it's particularly around the Sydney market.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what happened was the Daily Mail picked up my scenarios from last Tuesday night when I announced them, and included coverage of all the different scenarios, including the 80% one, which is a 5% probability. I might put that scenarios up now. And I think that's probably where they picked it up from. And of course, the Daily Mail has a bit of a reputation of publishing all sorts of stuff from all sorts of sources, but then it gets picked up, and I think it was picked up, as you say, by NetEase, and they're preaching my tune, which is quite interesting, really.
Well, it is, and as I said, Martin, it's not just one article. It was a series of articles that came out over the weekend. And the second one has even a more startling heading, that is Chinese investors escaping Australian real property market. You know, Australian real property market facing a collapse. That's that's the actual heading. So this article goes on to cite or quote people that have actually experienced resales and falls in property prices. I just think that they're probably interviewing some of the property buyers that I come across over in the North Shore, Martin.
could well be. Well, there are a few of them around who are getting rather twitchy and nervous. And, you wonder to what extent this is official, because, of course, this isn't actually official government media in China, is it, as far as we can tell? But then I don't know how disconnected it is from the official line.
Look, it's not an official Chinese government media. It's not part of the official media arm. However, considering the censorship regulations in China and the amount of articles published on NetEase over the weekend, you know, I can't help but believe that it presents. We could perhaps say that it presents an endorsement of the Chinese government sentiment with regards to investors that are looking at buying property in Australia or looking at buying other class assets in Australia. It's also be seen as a warning and as a warning flag for people that do have assets here in Australia, and many do. In all sorts of shapes and forms, under companies, under trusts, under legitimate sales and whatever, and is it a calling on the Chinese nationals to pull out and pull back and put back that money into China? I mean, it's definitely you can't overlook these articles. You can't not pay attention to them, even in its as they stand.
Mm. Well, it's very interesting. What I can also tell you is that I've had three people who are connected to the property sector each tell me a similar story, and that is this is to do with high-rise off-the-plan purchases that were actually bought by Chinese buyers, and they put down basically their initial deposit. But when it comes to completing the transaction, they've gone walkabout. And in each case, the story seems to be the same, that people seem to have left the country. And therefore, they're sitting on these deposits on property that is effectively unable to complete. Now, if that is true, and I can't validate it independently, but I've had three separate sources all tell me about that in the last week, not the same property, suggest to me there could be something else going on.
Look, it's a given. And those type of stories aren't few. There's a lot of them like that. I speak to a lot of conveyances and conveyancing lawyers that that we know of that people have walked away and try to chase the buyers for any further shortfalls in the after they take the deposit. It's hard enough to chase somebody here in Australia under our regulations, under our laws, let alone trying to bring somebody that bought something off the plan and it's just put a 10% deposit and it's no longer valued $1 million, but it's now only valued at $750,000, and there's obviously a shortfall from the deposit to the current sale. And the other thing is, Martin, that theoretically or technically, you can't chase the purchaser for any shortfalls until you've materialized the shortfall. So the property has to be sold in order to quantify the loss before you could start proceedings anyway.
Right. So that means you need to find another buyer who's willing and able to complete the transaction at whatever price, right? And then essentially make a decision as to whether it's worth chasing the difference from the first buyer, who probably now is not here in Australia, but perhaps back in China, and might be difficult to trace.
Exactly. And I think I'm not sure whether you and I have discussed it live on our podcast or in other our phone conversations, but I have alluded to in the past, in previous years, that the issue, there's a further issue to that, is that people that buy any property off the plane, the stamp duty is due and payable on or before 3 months. So if the property is taken a year, 2 years, 3 years to complete, there's a stamp duty component payable on or before 3 months on that contract as well. So I know of, and I have spoken to a number of conveyancing lawyers who are looking at chasing the stamp duty that they've paid, that their clients have paid in advance, and the contracts have been rescinded, mutually rescinded by the vendors and the purchasers. But there's that outstanding stamp duty that the government has already taken that now they're asking for it back, because theoretically the contract has not settled. So therefore, that money is due and payable back to the original purchaser.
Yeah, we actually discussed that in a post some time ago, actually. And looking at the stamp duty issues that a number of states have at the moment, with transactions volumes still being relatively low, that's going to put an extra drain on the old finances. And I suspect that Melbourne might well be the most significantly exposed, because we also noticed some other issues relating to Melbourne, particularly people perhaps some fleeing.
It is rather interesting. On the weekend, Martin, we came across the competitors to our clients that were actually FaceTiming the agents, bidding for the properties that we were going to be bidding on as well. It's interesting that one of our friends and followers on Twitter, with a Twitter handle MD, took a snapshot of removalist trucks surrounding the vehicle that they were in, and it's surrounded by removalist trucks in Melbourne, where everybody's moving out and playing musical chairs. Now, you and I have discussed this a possible phenomenon. We discussed this a few weeks back. I said they'll bypass Sydney altogether and potentially we'll end up in Queensland, because it's the climate's a lot better out there. To the properties are a lot cheaper than what they are in Sydney, and so I guess those trucks are going all the way to Queensland, Martin.
Well, could well be. What I will just say is that I've been looking at some detail in the Queensland property, and there are a few areas where prices are relatively strong, but there are many areas where they're very weak. I looked at Cairns, for example, and I'll tell you what, I posted a show on Saturday which looked specifically at Cairns property prices. And boy, that stirred up a hornet's nest of real estate agents, all claiming that suddenly it all turned around and the data was 2 months behind and everything was now booming again, right? How many times have we heard that?
Look, we hear it over and over again, but look, there are some pockets, no doubt. So the question is, the if there are, and look, I don't doubt, because I've also had some clients or some contacts in the mortgage industry as well as in the banking sector, their clients relocating to Queensland. But it's no different to Sydney. The areas are very small pockets. You don't create a big property market, a big property boom out of a few sales, and that's what the industry tends to hang its hat on. You've got this out of line sales, and I would dare say that that's the same thing that happens with the mainstream here in the Sydney auction clearance rates, the Sydney listings, and the stories of how certain properties achieve a particular sale above reserve. One, the actual guides are questionable. The underquoting is very coming. It's coming back into the framing, into the scope of the of fair trading. I should hope so, that they're looking at very, very closely with all the underquoting that's going on at all the auction scenarios. But overall, I still don't see the number of transactions rising much more than what they've been moving along over the last couple of months. What I have noted in the last week or so has been that there's been an increase in listing numbers. And my question is, although it's only just a week or two, week and a half now, of listing numbers actually rise, the for sale listing numbers in Sydney, the question is will this trend continue, and how far will it go? So it goes back to the articles and the push for these Chinese media platforms pushing and spooking the property investors, whether they be off-the-plan property buyers now, or whether it be people that have bought properties through various vehicles such as trust companies and trusts, whatever the case. How many of those properties are going to hit the market, and how much more pressure is that going to place on the listings in comparison to the real number of buyers that are out there? So that's that's an unknown at the moment, but I'm sure we are going to see more and more of that in weeks to come. So I don't believe that the market can sustain another 1,000 listings of freestanding homes, Martin. That's something that as I said before, I'm keeping a very close eye on, that because that is a very, very strong and significant factor with regards to how we're really tracking economically. And I don't believe that that the market can sustain or put up with another 1,000 freestanding home listings. And before I hand it back over to you, we also got to remember that off-the-plan purchases isn't just don't just think that it's apartments in high-rise developments. A lot of Asian and Chinese investors bought off-the-plan property in residential areas, in subdivisions as well, Martin.
Yeah, very good point. And it's interesting that I've had quite a few people respond to our last week's rant where we were talking about underquoting. And I've had quite a few people quote examples of where they've seen it. So this does seem to be extremely widespread. And maybe that's an attempt to try and, stoke the market. But also, the homeland story and, those off-the-plan things still going along quite fast. In fact, the latest statistics show that there was a bit of an uptick in that particular lending category. But just bear in mind, that's approvals. That's not actually drawn down loans. So I think this is a much more complex situation than many people were thinking that it was. And I think it's going to take some time before we can see how this all shakes out. But so far as I can see, there's very little positive news in the middle of it.
Well, it's. I think the only you could say it compares or compares to the searchable index, doesn't it? Isn't it the same thing? The searchable index and the amount of loans people have applied for, but not necessarily moving to the next phase, which is the transaction, and that's what really counts, is the transaction. There may be more people searching for property online, and there may be more people applying for home loans, but is that really equating to to sales. I don't see the sales numbers ticking up as much as what the mainstream reference or pin the searchable index growth and the application for loan increases over the last month or so. I don't see that it's translating into actual sales at the moment. What I am seeing are properties, what I'm still seeing in a number of areas, and what my associates are seeing in a number of areas, are a lot of people turning up to the auctions, a lot of people registering to bid at auctions, but very few, you know, are putting the hand up or putting the paddle up to make an offer on a property, which now is in some pockets of Sydney is translating into properties going post auction campaigns into private treaty campaigns, which is now which then in itself puts pressure on the prices and the vendors' expectations and the agents' guides. So again, it goes back to what people are quoting and what they actually get at the end of the day are worlds apart.
Yeah, very interesting. And I can certainly talk to two points. Firstly, the CoreLogic forward leading index on mortgages, and that there's more transactions, is down again, right? And they actually admitted that today, that the throughput's quite low. And the second is, it's quite clear to me that the gap between loans approved, in other words, they get a letter from the bank saying, yeah, we'll lend that to you, and that's accepted. And then, you know, they have to go find a property, and then they have to be able to value that property and go on from that, right? That's very different from actually transacting on a property, landing on it, and completing on it. And the only thing I can think of to explain the gap between the rising approvals and the much lower levels of stock in terms of mortgages on the bank's books is that people aren't actually following through. They're not actually converting an approved loan to a real loan, maybe because they can't find the property, or they can't get their financing sorted out, or the valuation goes off or something like that. Because you know, you can argue that some of the difference is because people are paying down more loans, and some of those other loans are being rolled on, so that means they're accumulating interest. But overall lending growth is falling rather than rising, and that to me has always been a leading indicator of more trouble ahead. So that's why I say I think this has still got a long way to go, and I just can't see it turning around any soon. And then, just to add insult to injury, right, we should, just before we finish, just mention a certain suburb in Sydney where, in fact, there are sinkholes appearing.
Well, properties and driveways are sinking as well. But is it any wonder should we be amazed at all with these areas that these subdivisions that have been backfilled and properties being built on what historically, in a lot of cases were 1 in 50 flood zones. You only have to look at at Google Maps to see all the streams and all the waterways and all the small lakes in all these areas, and a lot of it has been backfilled in order to raise the level of the land so that they can so that these homes can be built. And the way that these homes are built, with so-called new technologies and construction methods, and they're going to have issues. We're going to have ongoing issues, and yet our fearless government is telling the first home buyers to push west and push further out and push the fringes, the Sydney fringes further out into areas where we shouldn't be building any residential dwellings at all.
Mm. Well, but Edwin, surely the whole point about those new basements is that was your instant swimming pool, right? I mean, it's obviously a feature that wasn't included in the original listing, but, you know, once the sinkhole goes down far enough, you fill it with water, and then you've got your instant swimming pool. What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Look, all these things are going to come home to roost and bite everybody in on the backside. The interesting thing that I've also been hearing on the streets. Yeah, word on the streets is with a lot of the contractors. They're preparing to offload a lot of their employees in March next year. If their contracts that they are bidding for in the construction arena, the values of the contracts have dropped anywhere from 20% to 30%. And the only reason why they still have apprentices on board, and the only reason why they still have subcontractors on board or offloaded some of the work that they would otherwise do themselves is because of JobKeeper. Now, once that goes, and once we start hitting reality come March next year, then a lot of the people in trades, different trades that I've spoken to, are telling me that they're going to be offloading a lot of people. So there's going to be a lot of tradies out there looking for work, or they're going to be prepared to do work, as I said, a lot cheaper than what they've been used to. No different to what we've also discussed about people working from home. People have got to realize that if you can work from home, the company can source other people that can do your job a lot cheaper, because now that if you don't need to go into the office, obviously they're going to be able to get other people to do your job remotely for a lot less, and not necessarily outsource it overseas. It'll be outsourced to local people that are willing to do it for a lot less, because they themselves don't have to commute into the urban hubs.
Yeah, very interesting that on that as well, Edwin. The interesting observation I got there is that I've been talking to a few people who actually have gone for the homeland package, right? And they're now going through the finalization of all of the costs and what have you, right? And there are two factors that are seen to be influencing what's going on. Firstly, the cost of labor is definitely degrading. In other words, it's going down, right? But the cost of materials is going through the roof, because the supply chains have been disrupted because of the virus. And to try and actually square the circle, they're now talking about changing some of the materials in the design. And you wonder whether they're actually going to be cutting corners on materials and also cutting labor costs to try and make the economics of the proposition work, despite the fact, of course, that off the plan would have been higher by about $55,000 in Western Australia because of all the incentives, right? But they can't make the economics work. So it's going to be, I think, leading to more poor quality construction and possibly more sinkholes later. This is just another recipe for disaster.
No doubt, Martin. And it's just one of the ways that builders and developers have cut corners, and they cut corners to make a greater profit, but the people that lose out are the people that buy in all these new so-called shiny new developments or dwellings that pop up like mushrooms overnight, and that should be a leading indicator. If they can build them so quickly, what's wrong with them? That's just the thing. If you're building it on shifting ground, things are going to move. There's going to be issues, and the supervision hasn't been there. There's really no real care has been taken, because everything's just been ad hoc for many years. So I'm hoping that the building commissioner will sort things out, but it's going to be another few years before things start to be sorted out. And in the meantime, there are people going to be in the firing line. I try to have a Twitter discussion with Shane Oliver from AMP with regards to the government's proposal and push to increase the grants and the put out another 10,000 proposal. I call them loans, government loans for people to get into new dwellings, so they can take up the option of that. And my question has been and will continue to be, you've got these shoddy developments, shoddy new dwellings that are being built on smaller blocks of smaller parcels of land, with all this, because of these government incentives, pushing further out, pushing the boundaries of the natural boundaries of where you should build in the first place, and just pushing them further afield, away from infrastructure, a lot costlier than what you could buy something closer to real infrastructure that has been standing for the last 10, 15, 20 years, so you know what you're getting in the first place, on bigger blocks of land. And okay, the kitchen may be a little bit tight, but guess what? The kitchen's composed of materials that doesn't contain arsenic or in other chemicals that we're going to start importing, the cheaper chemicals with the cheaper products, fixtures and fittings with all the bad chemicals that are just going to be overlooked. Why? Because they're cheaper. Because otherwise you can't build. Otherwise you can't get the developers' margins or the builders' margins at the end of the day. The ledgers don't marry up, and therefore, you know, somebody has to pay the price. So I think it's going to be twofold. It's going to be for the buyers. There's going to be a twofold detriment. One is the health, potential health issues with the type of materials that are being used in the construction. And two, it's going to be financial issues, because by the time these new dwellings are completed, they're going to be worth a lot less than something that's been established closer to real infrastructure, although it may be 5 years old or 3 years old, or even 2 years old. It's going to be cheaper than to buy that than what you could buy something new and shiny out in the sticks with no infrastructure, with bad quality materials, and in smaller blocks of land. So I really can't grasp why the government is so blind to note and to understand that these incentives, these handouts, it's just creating more problems further down the track for the people that are falling for it.
Ah, but Edwin, you've got to understand that the reason they're doing it is to support the construction sector and to support jobs, right, at any price, at any cost. Never mind what it does to the property stock, never mind what it does to individual owner, occupiers or investors. This is about stoking the construction sector at any cost. And unfortunately, I think we're going to reap the whirlwind down the track, because poor quality construction, poor quality and located lots, and lack of infrastructure is going to put downward pressure on prices. And interestingly, I've also noticed that the price of existing properties in and around areas where the new ones are now being sold is also being depressed, because people would prefer to go and buy a new one and pay a bit more rather than buy an existing one. So it's already having an immediate impact on the existing property in and around the area. And yet I always use the analogy of, you drive away a new car and immediately you lose, what, 10% or 15%, whatever it is, right? And the analogy with buying new, particularly off the plan, with all the risks entailed, is somewhat similar. I just think that we are actually being lured into a property future, which is pretty horrendous. But I have to say, I don't think the regulators, nor indeed the state or even federal legislators, are really that interested. All they're interested in doing is construction boost, construction support. And by the way, that also drives mortgages as well. So, you know, that's the name of the game. Therefore, individual prospective purchasers and borrowers need to do their homework. They need to be very cautious and very careful and ask those hard questions about the price of construction, the quality of construction, and all the things that we touch on, because you can't rely on any protection from any statutory or legal body. You can't rely on any protection from the builders. They're all out to make a quick buck. The government doesn't support us either. So it is caveat emptor. It is absolutely, the buyer has to be aware.
Yeah, but interestingly, with a lot of pre-settlement inspections that some of my colleagues tried to do for their clients, builders and developers won't let them do it. They give them a report that's been prefabricated or pre-printed by their building inspector, which obviously is paid by them, and not get an independent one in order to make sure to cover themselves. And that's what the government should be looking at. But obviously, look, it's a short-sighted vision. The more dwellings are built further out, obviously the more debt people are going to get into it, and it's because it's easy money, it's cheap money, it's money that's been thrown at them. A lot of these people taking on these so-called cheap money and taking on these government incentives, they don't realize that the 15% is a loan. It's not a gift. It's a loan, and you know, and all the added problems and issues and the oversupply. If we didn't have so many empty dwellings closer to the CBDs, that you and I know of that are out there, if we didn't have those, then I'd say it would be a lot easier. But with everything else, with all these grenades that are about to place. So going back to our initial discussion with this fear of this Chinese investors that's been created by these articles, the question is how many of the dwellings that have been bought by Chinese investors are going to land on the market? Ones that are empty, have been empty for many years, or may not even be empty. That's going to be very interesting. It's not just going to be apartments that this is going to affect. It's going to be also home and land packages that Chinese investors or foreign investors were allowed and are allowed to buy under the Foreign Investment Review Board regulations. And they have been bought, and many have been bought, in the likes of Kellyville, Box Hill, Oran Park. There are many Chinese investors in those areas. How many of those are going to come back on the market, and how much pressure is that, downward pressure, is that going to place on the surrounding suburbs, let alone all these new dwellings that are going up, and people are, first-time buyers are avoiding the older, more established subdivisions that have been around for the last 15, 20, 25 years, and bypassing those, all because, they've got a bit of extra government handout 10, 15 minutes further out west, southwest or northwest. They're all the grenades that have been thrown in. And then, of course, we've also discussed the issue of the retirees, something that the budget hasn't really captured. Anybody over 35 hasn't really had a major benefit with the budget. And obviously the ones that are, they're under the greatest pressure are the older generation, and particularly the ones that are coming to retirement and have retired and may not necessarily have a mortgage. So these are the things that are going to continue to further impact the market with downward pressure, I feel. In some areas they're being spooked into buying, but I just say to our people, just sit back, wait for the right opportunity. Don't be scared to throw your hat in the ring, and pick it at the price that you wanted to pick it up, not at the price that the agent wants you to buy it at.
Yeah, great advice. And the message really is, take your time. Don't get bounced into things. Don't get caught on the free money from the government. There's no such thing as free money from the government. You pay one way or the other, in my view. The chances are that prices will be lower later anyway, so you can probably buy better later. Edwin, I really appreciate your time today. That's been a very interesting conversation, and we've certainly looked at it from all angles, but I think the net conclusion is that people should be ultra cautious at the moment, and once again we have to say, beware the spruikers.
Definitely, Martin. And look, I've had to keep a serious face for the last two podcasts because there are some serious matters that are happening. We've had people leave Twitter and say goodbye to Twitter, and I was very saddened last week the fact that our mate Tarek and his cronies scared the searchable index author away from Twitter. But I can happily say that he's back online, and I'm going to be reading the searchable index moving forward. So, way to go, REI. Thank you for the searchable index and for bringing your colleague and your author of the searchable index back on Twitter. And I'm going to enjoy reading that on Giggle Fridays.
And when you're wicked. Thanks very much for your time today. Great to catch up as normal. And I guess we'll do the same again next week.
Yes, Mark, we will. And looking forward to it.
Okay, take care. It's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics signing off. See you next time.